Thanks for listening to the Lunch and Learn with Dr. Barry, here to help educate, motivate, and put you on the right path to take control of your health through weekly discussions on topics in the medical field, public health arena, and in your community. And now your host, Dr. Barry.
All right, welcome to another episode of Medicine Mondays. I think this is going to be a good one, everyone. This is a person that I've actually, y'all know how I typically do for my guests. I like to watch them from afar because, as a physician, I just like admiring seeing other physicians do things, obviously within the medical field, but definitely within social media and kind of seeing how, they kind of present themselves. So I am a big fan of Dr. Kamadi. First of all, thank you for taking the time out to, grace our Lunch and Learn community. And this is actually going to be a very interesting topic and this may be a little focused, obviously, especially for my, my non-medical Lunch and Learn listeners. You may not get this, but for those who, my residents, my physician, those in GME, this is going to be a good one for you. Dr. Kamadi, thank you for joining the show this week.
I'm happy to be here.
So before we get into kind of the nitty gritty, if you can, and I always like to give my guests the floor to just kind of introduce themselves and say, hey, this is who I am, this is why, and then just kind of what you're doing here and now.
Yeah. So, my name is Brian Carmody. I'm a pediatric nephrologist and I'm a medical school educator. And to whatever extent I'm known as anything other than those things, I'm known as the Sheriff of Sodium. For the stuff that I put out on, YouTube and X and, social media, which is commentary on residency selection and medical education.
And I do want to, we'll definitely get into the real topic at hand, but I'm always very interested when I see my other educators who are in graduate medical education, really kind of, cause typically that's a job that's kind of in the background, like, of them, they're there, but they're usually quiet. They're usually not as vocal. And following over the years, that's definitely one thing that I've really admired about you is that you've been able to kind of put a voice to the people who are typically in the background.
Well, thank you for saying that. Yeah, I mean, I sort of decided a couple of years ago when I was going to start talking about some of this stuff that I was going to say what I thought and what I believed to be the truth. And not worry about how other people were going to respond to that or how, whether it was going to keep me from climbing the career ladder or something like that. I've stuck to that.
And I definitely appreciate it. I was a former program director. So just being able to see someone in that light, kind of talk about it always like, oh, yes, love it. So obviously, again, I don't want to talk your head off. Cause like I said, Lunch and Learn listeners, I'm actually a big fan of Dr. Carmody. I want to talk about the most recent thing that's really come across my timeline. I know you've already touched on it and have had to touch on it quite often in the past couple of weeks. Is this most recent scandal, right? I don't even know. I don't want to say scandal is the word, but like this most recent issue that we've just heard with the USMLE and, fraudulent testing results. And you've been pretty vocal and definitely pretty active about it. Like, can you kind of give Lunch and Learn just a little bit of insight of what's kind of going on from that perspective?
Yeah. So I don't mind calling it a scandal. I mean, I think that's what it is. Most people heard about this at the end of January when the National Board of Medical Examiners announced that they were invalidating the USMLE scores of a group of residency applicants and current residents because of questions about whether those scores were valid. And so that's generated a lot of discussion and a lot of, interesting conversations. And my inbox has been full and my mentions have been full. And I've had quite a bit to say about that over the past, 3 or 4 weeks.
What's interesting to me, because again, I read it, I first read it on Medscape. And then of course, Medscape, like I saw, it already had like a little, like, oh yes, I know. I figured he might talk on it. And then I kind of went down the rabbit hole kind of following kind of your commentary. And when I first saw it, I hate to say it, I wasn't shocked. Right. I wasn't surprised because I've just always felt that the opportunity for an organized effort, right, to get the best scores, store questions. I've always felt that that opportunity has always been there, but I just assume that, you know what, like, what can you do? Like, how are you going to be able to even bring that out? And you actually went into some great detail on how you felt like it was probably discovered.
Sorry to break your concentration. I know you're probably knee-deep into today's episode, but do not forget, check out our Lunch and Learn community store, shop.drbarrypierre.com. Remember to use the code EMPOWER10 and make sure you are leaving us a 5-star review, especially on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Thank you. Now back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
Yeah, right. And now actually, we don't even have to speculate because the method that was used, or at least one of the methods that was used, is now a matter of public record because, this scandal has generated a lawsuit from one of the examinees whose scores were invalidated. She sued the National Board of Medical Examiners and asked for an emergency injunction to restore the scores so that group of applicants could, proceed in the match this year. And the court denied that, I think appropriately. But in the back and forth between the plaintiff and the NBME sort of disclosed how they got to this. So we could talk about that if you're interested, or really whatever you
Oh
want
yeah,
to talk about.
most definitely. And for my Lunch and Learn listeners, especially those who may not be in GME, just because I gave a it's so funny. I kind of I'll tell you, Dr. Herman, I kind of wrote it in the stars, right? Because I did a little discussion on it, and I said, there's this guy I followed, Dr. Harmony. Like, he's went on a great detail about it. I wonder if I can get him on the show to go into more. So I definitely like kind of pre-told, like, if I can get him on the show, I'm gonna try to get him on the show. For those who may not know, again, USMLE scores, these are the nationalized or internationalized exams needed to go from one step to the other, especially if you want to go from pre-med to medical student, more importantly, from medical student to actually attending physician. So these are kind of the barrier stepping stones that are needed. So to have a systemic process that, again, essentially says, hey, this person is good enough to be a physician, aka take care of you, right, in the hospital in your time of need, right? Just so you can kind of understand how severe news like this is very troubling.
Yeah, you're right. So I will emphasize one thing that you just said, but to make it crystal clear, this is a licensing exam. Yeah, I mean this is what determines if your physician is allowed to treat other human beings or not. So now, of course, it is true. These exams have an incredible importance in residency selection. Applicants aspire to have the highest score possible so that they can attract the attention of residency program directors and get their foot in the door. So I mean, there's a strong incentive to cheat. And what seems to have happened is that over the past few years, in Nepal in particular, but I don't think by any means this is something that's isolated to Nepal, cheating reached such a scale and had such efficiency that it became impossible to ignore. That's what I think happened. And I mean, that's what's come out of
That's a
it.
great point. Wow. Okay.
So basically, I kind of mentioned a minute ago, I mean, most people heard about this on January 31st. To be honest, it's something I've been hearing about for a while. I mean, one fun thing about talking about stuff that I do is that people tell me different things, and not always all of it's true, but through the fall, I got two messages talking about how USMLE aspirants in Nepal were using verbatim USMLE test questions to study for the USMLE. And so I one of the people that told me this, I said, you ought to report that to USMLE. And then as you mentioned, Medscape actually was working on a story on that very issue before the scandal even broke. And in matter of fact, I think it was the questions from the reporter that pushed the USMLE into making the announcement as rapidly as they did. I think that if that had not been ongoing, we would have heard about it, but it would have been a little later, is my opinion. Again, of course, I don't know, but yeah, the reporter was 90% done with her story before the news even broke. But basically, what the lawsuit details is that starting in around January 2023, so a year before the announcement was made, the USMLE began to get multiple credible reports that there was a cheating ring in Nepal, and some other countries got named too, and they're named by name in the court filings, but most of it is certainly the worst of it seems to be in Nepal, and the nature of it was that examinees were collecting all the exam questions that they'd received and compiling them and sharing them in a Telegram group online. And to gain access to this group, you had to show some connection to Nepal and a valid USMLE scheduling permit. And once you were inside, though, among other things, they had a 1,000-page document, which I guess they was called Savior. And you would memorize this 1,000-page document. And some people would had asserted that 90 to 95% of the questions that they received on the exam were actually questions that were contained in that very document. So, yeah, so when the USMLE began to get reports of this, they described what they did next. They first they kind of took a high-level view and looked at performance on the USMLE for you know, if you just take the highest level view and you look at USMLE scores by the country in which someone went to medical school. For USMLE Step 1, Step 2 CK, and Step 3, Nepal medical graduates had the highest USMLE scores, and it's not even close. And you know, on USMLE Step 2 CK, the average Nepali medical graduate in 2023 scored a 259 on Step 2 CK. That's the average. So half the people are scoring higher than that. And to me, actually, the most telling statistic was this. You know, in 2023, USMLE Step 1 was pass-fail. You know, it was a pass-fail exam. And of course, in the years before, you know, that was your ticket to residency was a high USMLE Step 1 score. And so each year, US medical graduates scored higher and higher and higher on that test. It maxed out around a 235 in the year 2020. So US medical graduates in a scored Step 1 era, the best they ever got was a 235. In 2023, with a pass-fail Step 1, the average Nepali medical graduate scored a 240. So scoring higher than US medical graduates ever had in a world where the number that they get doesn't even get reported. You
Doesn't get
know, no
reported.
incentive to have a high score anymore. So it, you know, and it wasn't even just that too. They highlighted that the number of test takers in Nepal had grown exponentially. If you go back to 2014, there were, yeah, there were, yeah, there's still two other interesting things about that. So if you go back to 2014, there were around 100 graduates who would take the USMLE each year. In 2022, it was up to almost 1,000. So a tenfold growth.
This week's episode is brought to you by the Autism in Black Foundation, which is hosting the fourth annual Autism in Black Conference. This year's theme is Bridging the Gap, which is helping to celebrate our unique experiences, cultivating a community of understanding while building a brighter future together. Autism in Black Conference is designed by and for the Black autism community, centering on our needs, experiences, and aspirations. The conference looks to provide a safe and supportive space where Black individuals, families, professionals, and advocates can all come together to learn, share, and empower one another. For more information, including how to purchase tickets for the virtual conference, please check out drbarrypierre.com/AIB2024.
So you've got to view those average scores not just as being the highest in the world by a large margin, but also the highest at the same time that a larger subset of people from that country are taking the exam.
Which you would assume would at least bring it down if more
Right.
people
Yes,
are.
right. Yeah, it makes you wonder. I mean, if this was not related to cheating, I mean, 10 years ago, there were people just sitting around in Nepal who had the ability to rock the USMLE and just weren't interested in taking it, I guess, you know. Then another interesting thing was it wasn't just that more people were registering. The pattern in which they registered for the exams, there would be a surge of people taking the exams right before the USMLE changed their test questions. The examinees had recognized when new test material got introduced. And so there would be a surge of registrants right before then because they wanted to test with the old test questions. So they cited those lines of evidence. They further cited that, you know, not only were the scores very high, but when you looked at the time that examinees took to answer the questions,
Oh, don't tell me.
you know, USMLE questions are designed to take on average 90 seconds to answer each item. And, you know, many of the questions, as you know, they're quite dense, you know,
Yes.
and
I
full
mean,
of
'cause
details that
you
you
might
sort of got
spend
to think.
time,
And
you might spend a good 30 to 40 just trying to get through the question. Like, okay, what do we, before you even get to the answer choices, like, okay.
Yeah, right. And that would be a typical experience. And yet, for many of these examinees who had the very highest scores, they were answering many test items in 20 seconds or less, and with a very high degree of accuracy. And that simply was not a pattern that was observed in any other high scorer around the world. You know, so again, when you compile these sort of statistical anomalies, you get to a probability that these kind of things could occur by chance. That's just,
Zero, almost zero, not
yeah,
zero.
exactly. I mean, it's got so many zeros before the number that, I mean, it's just, you know, any reasonable person would say this is not a valid score. And if the validity of the score is called into question, the USMLE has an obligation to not report it. I mean, it's not a moral judgment. It's a judgment that we're giving a test that's intended to assess these constructs, and we can't be sure that they're assessed. You know, we can't be certain about that. And so they say we're not going to report the scores. You got to take the exam again. And and there were 832 examinees that we know about so far for whom that's been what they've heard from the USMLE.
And what's interesting, especially for my listeners who may not understand why this is such a big deal, right? As a, because I went to Nova Southeastern, right? And when I was applying for a residency, you know, it was competition. This is what it is. It's competition. So if you have a faction, a group of people who they've already skewed the competition like to their side, like how are you supposed to get that post at UM and UH and all these other, you know, prestigious places if you already know you're already behind the eight ball? So it puts a lot of grads, you know, especially here in the, and I've always been pro United States, right, when it comes to kind of graduate medical education and trying to get into a lot of these residencies. So when you see something like this where like not only do you have a group of people who have an advantage, now there's a systemic advantage where it's like it kind of just like my antennas go off. And to see how coordinated an effort like this is, and what's worse is still, and of course, you know, like I said, I'm following you, and I'm seeing people still arguing with you,
Oh, yeah.
still in your mention saying like, how is this fair? And I'm like, guys, like, what are we
Right.
talking about here? Like, how, like, how are we getting to a point where there's like an argument? Like, come on, they got caught. Like, they weren't
Yeah.
smart. I'm sorry, they weren't smart enough to not get caught, or depends on how long they've been doing it for.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. And I mean, I have ignored a lot of those sort of you know, people who claim to not understand how this is evidence of cheating. And I mean, I'm to the point now where I've sort of got to say, I mean, like, you know, if you don't understand this, I mean, you need to take your fingers out of your ears. You know, you need to listen and think about this because, you know, it's beyond what anybody could reasonably expect. And there's just not a good explanation for it other than cheating. And you know, the USMLE was careful, and they corroborated this isn't just statistical evidence. You know, one thing I haven't mentioned so far is that once their tips directed them to it, they had someone enter this Telegram group and share with them what was inside. And so, yeah, inside, you know, there's frank discussion about these are past questions. Because, you know, I mean, one thing that somebody pointed out to me, which I thought was a good question until sort of more facts came out, was, you know, did these people know that they were cheating? I mean, if you just had a question bank, let's
Oh,
say,
okay, I
I
see.
mean,
I see.
is it possible? I mean,
I did
yeah.
see you mention that there's services out there that offer like old questions or like, hey, pay.
Well, yeah, I mean, so it's true. Like, I mean, you know, any smart test prep company is very keenly interested in talking to people who have recently taken the USMLE because they want to make sure that their content is appropriately tailored to the exam, you know? And, you know, on an extreme, I mean, you could make a case that companies that do that, which is a large number of very, you know, well-known companies, it's sort of a way of sanitizing and laundering these USMLE recalls, you know. But I mean, I think it's sort of beyond dispute that if you've got actual USMLE questions, that's not really, you know, I don't think anybody who has the acumen to become a physician would really think that a licensing authority would judge someone's ability to practice medicine by their ability to recall questions from a 1,000-page document hidden inside a Telegram group. You know, that's not, I don't think any reasonable person would think that. So anyway, you know, there was a lot of frank discussion in the group about these being pass questions. And then, I mean, really one of the most telling things was, you know, there were admonitions from the group administrators to examinees that were finishing the exam early. You know, that some people with these recalls, they would finish this grueling, you know, 8 to 9 hour exam 2 or 3 hours early, you know, and go home. And, you know, so the administrators are like, don't do that, you know, stay the whole time. And it's like, you know, any legitimate resource that you're using, I mean, you're not going to have UWorld telling people like, now be sure if you use UWorld to, you know, take the whole time when you take the test. No legitimate place is going to do that.
No, because they don't have to, because they just understand that,
Right.
like, even though I give you this, like, it's going to take you some time. Like, it, like, this is just kind of an outline of, you know, what we've known, but, like, you're going to have to, hit the nitty-gritty. And the fact that you kind of have to tell them, like, hey, guys, like, try not to go through this as fast. A again, it's just one of those disconnects that once more and more information comes out, what's the discussion here? Like, what are we having? And I love it because you broke one of your questions. You had broke down, and this was before kind of the lawsuit came out, where you was like, well, I could see a scenario of how they could catch it, right? Because you did a great job breaking down like how they could possibly do it. And if you had, a set of 10 to 15 questions that USMLE knows no one's likely getting this is not going to be scored. We're going to throw this question out anyway. We just kind of want to see what it looks like. And then you have a significant amount of people not only get those questions right, but all get the same questions right or get the same questions wrong. I'm like, oh, like, guys, what are we doing here?
Right. So you pointed out actually something that I was kind of building to, and then I got sidetracked. So the main statistical technique that the USMLE did was they did something called agreement analysis. And I did actually you know, predict that with my second video. There's a few different techniques that, you know, you could use, but this is what they acknowledged using in the lawsuit. So what you sort of hit on the idea, which is that at a given level of performance, I mean, you've got, you know, 300 questions potentially on the USMLE. You might have people have the same score or similar scores, but there's an extremely large number of permutations that you could get that score. And, you know, I mean, you might get 254 questions right, but you're not going to get the exact same 254 questions right. You know, it just simply is not observed in the wild. It's only observed in these unusual, you know, situations that we're talking about here. So that's actually what they did. And moreover, they looked not only at correct answers, they looked at incorrect answers. Because if you're choosing the exact same incorrect answers, which I predicted this in the video too, you know that this recall probably included some incorrect responses. Because you can remember the question or you can steal the question, but you still got to answer it yourself.
They got an
And
answer, yeah.
so, you know, the many of these examinees were going in and just saying what they'd seen on the, you know, on the recall, which was incorrect. And so that's what did them in, you know.
And I love and for those who and especially if you caught it, the reason why you had answered it that way, because I think someone asked you, well, what happens if I just have a like I kill the test and I have a high score? And then that was
Right.
kind of your a response breakdown. And I was like, oh, you know what? That makes sense. Because again, I'm not saying like every single person in Nepal was cheating, right? Or all the other places that, may come out. But like, I could see maybe a scenario that maybe you got a couple of geniuses out there who really, really score high. And like, do they get washed into this sea of potential cheaters? And I love that's how you broke it down. You're like, well, no, because if they look, they can statistically see, like, oh, yeah, you did great, but you did great because you happen to answer these questions right, versus the reason why that person did great is because they happen to answer all of these. So I love like that statistical breakdown you had there for it.
And I think the other thing to do when you interpret these probabilities, I actually made a new video today that I'm going to post about, you know, with some of the updates from the lawsuit, but you know, this agreement analysis has been used in a couple of other famous cases. One that I'd heard of was one from the surgical certifying exam a long time ago, where back when it was a pencil and paper test, there was an examinee that several of the proctors noticed kept turning his head and looking like he was looking at someone else's answer sheet. And of course, when they confront him about it, he's like, oh no, you know, I'm stretching my neck or, you know, something. I mean, so it left the test authority with, Well, how do we prove that he cheated? I mean, if he's not going to own up to it. And so what they did is they did an agreement analysis, and they looked at how many correct and incorrect answers that examinee and the person he was seen to be cheating off of, how many they shared. And then out of all the other possible pairs, I mean, people who took the exam, different days and couldn't have possibly cheated off each other, how many, under normal testing situations, how many right and wrong answers does the average person share? And they made a graph. And the probability of having that many correct and incorrect answers shared ended up being a probability of like 1 in a billion. And even then, and this is the point that I want to make in the video, and even then, 1 in a billion is still an underestimate, because that's 1 in a billion of this just happening in general. But now you got to figure out the joint probability of not only do we have this extremely unusual, deviant observation, but oh, by the way, what's the chance of that happening in the exact person who was the only person who got seen to be cheating? I mean, so when you add those two things up, it's not like the USMLE was, I mean, sort of the sad part, or I guess the good part, depending on how you look at it. The sad part about this is the USMLE found these cheaters not because they were policing things or looking for some statistical signature. And I mean, honestly, a lot of the evidence they present kind of makes them look bad, because it's like, what did you think was going on when you saw things like this? Or, I
And
mean, I guess
I
you don't.
definitely want to lean into that. I definitely want to.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's in a way, that's a very sad and disappointing thing. But in a way, I think it should make you reassured that you're not going to have innocent people caught up in this. I mean, they were directed to this particular ring by other people who didn't like what was going on, and so there was a reason to look at them. And then when they looked, I mean, the evidence just, smacked them over the head,
And I wonder, especially leaning into that, if you don't have, the people informing them, the people investigating, if you don't have those things, like why isn't there a system where that just flags? Like why did it take all of those things to occur for the USMLE to be like, oh, what's happening over there? Especially if there's concern that this is happening in different locations.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I agree. I think, I mean, I think we haven't heard the last of this. I mean, I think that for sure. I mean, in the lawsuit acknowledges getting tips about concerns at two test centers in India, test centers in Jordan, and test centers in Pakistan. Those are the ones that are mentioned in the lawsuit, and they describe some analyses there and say that at those test centers, there was a statistically significant increase in agreement matches from those places. And again, if you understand sort of what they're doing, there's just not really a good explanation, for that. And so I think we will see more, and I don't think it'll be limited to those countries either. Nor do I think it should. I think, I mean, what you pointed out a minute ago, I think is a very good point, is that, there's people sitting on the sidelines who want to be in a resident or work as a physician, and they don't get the opportunity. So, I mean, every one of these people who gets in, someone else is being kept out,
And I think that's where, because I have a lot of friends who are international medical graduates, and I hear their plights, especially those people who have trouble getting in, to residencies, and they're I used to they used to especially I had a colleague, he used to call it like double 99, right? Where there were some places in like India and other places where like if you didn't get like 98, 99, they weren't even looking at your score. So imagine going into thinking like, all right, if I don't get this really high score, my shot at becoming a physician here is like zero. And then you hear something like this goes on, you're like, oh, okay, like what do I do, right? Especially if we start, especially if USMLE starts kind of looking and finding more places, like what do you think is going to happen? Do these people who may be in a residency as we speak, maybe finishing up a residency as we speak, like does something happen retroactively to them? Like what
Yeah.
is, because
Yeah.
now I'm thinking like, all right, like how far does the USMLE want to go without really making them look bad?
Right. I agree. The lawsuit acknowledges that they've gone back as far as 2021. Now, I mean, they may have looked back farther than that, but that's as much as they admitted to for this case. So going back to 2021, but I actually am aware of a couple of at least several cases where someone is already matched and they're in residency, they're in internship now. And unfortunately, if your USML, you know, if your United States medical licensing exam results are called into question, well, you don't have a license, you know. And if you have your step one or step two test called back and you're an international medical graduate, you lose your ECFMG certification, which is required if you want to train in an ACGME accredited residency program. So if you lose one of those scores and you're training as a resident, you're not eligible to be a resident anymore, you know. And then, I mean, it creates real issues too for people who you know, are here on a J1 work visa. You know, if you're no longer able to work at the hospital that was sponsoring you, then you're at risk of deportation. And I mean, all those things suck, but at the same time, they're the consequences of your own decisions.
That's it. That's it.
And
That's it.
yeah, so yeah.
If you get caught, there's some actions are gonna have to kind of follow,
Right.
unfortunately. Now I've seen it. I know you kind of mentioned where the USMLE is okay with them just retaking the tests. Like, is that something that, like, from a consensus, especially for kind of the people you've been following, some of the comments you've gotten, is that something that people are just okay with? Like, yeah, just go ahead and take the test again. And then the
Yeah.
question is, do they have to score high again, or what's the is there a benchmark that we're looking for?
Right. Yeah, it's a good question. So the USMLE offered, you know, all of these examinees, they say, you know, we, you know, can't report these scores anymore. But if, you know, you want to retake the exam, you can retake the exam at our expense. And so I don't know how many of the examinees, you know, have taken that up. I mean, at least one person, you know, purporting to represent the whole class of these individuals has sued. But so my feeling is that the USMLE's stance on that, you know, just making you take the test, is sort of they're positioning themselves as an expert on testing and psychometrics and not the moral authority. And it allows them to say, you know, we can't stand behind this result because we don't think it's an accurate representation of what the test is intended to measure. So you have to take it again and show something, you know, that you know allows us to vouch for the validity of your results. You know, why that happened, I don't know. You know, yeah, they can sort of be agnostic about that, you know, and simply, you know, say, we have evidence, which really is kind of incontrovertible, that this is not a valid result. So for someone who's in re who's a resident, I mean, if I would take that test as fast as you could, because you've got a spot, you've got somebody who probably likes you and believes in you, and you know, might be willing to look past all this, you know, if you can get back on track. You know, I mean, I said in one of my videos, I think some of these residents are done, but I think some of them will probably land on their feet if they play their cards right.
I agree, because I think if again, do I expect you to get the whatever score you got before? No, because let's say if I was that person, I'd be like, well, when I took it, I had time to study. It was all of my focus. But now, I gotta work, or I have this pressure of doing it. So if I don't score the same score, I can't necessarily be faulted. But as long as
Right.
I pass, right? Like that would be, again, if I was on that position, that would be my argument. I'd say, hey, I'm just gonna do it. I'm gonna make sure that y'all can see I
Yeah,
can be
right.
proficient enough to pass this thing. I may not be, in that high percentile anymore, but you could understand, because that would be my argument if I was, again, someone from Nepal's watching.
Yeah. And I think that's a legitimate argument because I certainly be hard pressed to get my USMLE scores, you know, if somebody made me go back and take it today. You know, but again, you know, the score is one thing, but to pass the exam, you know, you can move on. You know, you pass the exam, you have the minimum competency to become a licensed physician. And so especially for someone who's already matched, you know, that should be enough, you know. And like you said, I mean, there's many legitimate reasons to explain sort of a discrepancy in scores, you
Sure.
know.
Now, from a GME perspective, does Does this cause any concern as far as just applicants just in general? Like, because I can tell you, I tell people all the time, especially doing GME, and you go through hundreds of letters of recommendation, you see all these things here, you see a score, boom, boom, right? And you kind of like you figure, all right, that's the story of the score. And now you have something like this come out, and you're like, huh, like am I gonna have to now question, depending on where you took your score at, is this a valid enough score for me to like rank you or put you in?
I think it's I think it has hurt international medical graduates, and I think it's going to continue to hurt international medical graduates. I mean, it already has hurt them because this, sort of unlawfully acquired score inflation has probably diminished the way that programs were regarding other applicants' USMLE scores that were fairly earned in this cycle or last cycle. I mean, I think that's probably true. And as I said, I mean, at least some people matched with scores that are now known to be not accurate. But then the sad part is, that and part of this, I guess, is justified because I really don't think the other shoe has dropped yet. I mean, I think there are more of these invalidations that are coming. And
You think on a
so,
larger scale, or is just
yeah, I do. I mean, like I said, I mean, I mean, the lawsuit, the MME's response acknowledges that they're, I mean, they're in possession now of evidence of, more cheating that goes beyond Nepal, So, so I think that shoe is going to drop. But I think what's hard is that, it's very easy to imagine that leading programs to unfairly assess all international medical graduates, because you of course don't want to be a program director and have somebody into the program and then find out that you were duped or find out that actually they're getting their score called back and who knows if they'll be able to that's not what you want. But you swing too far and we've got a different problem,
And especially as you mentioned, because again, a lot of times, numbers are numbers, right? So if you start and validating a good significant amount of numbers, and all of a sudden residency spots are dropping, and we already know kind of the financial implications, right, of having a resident at a hospital and getting a certain reimbursement. Like, so I could see how like that could be a very significant domino. Like if, and again, obviously we're hoping that it's not huge, but again, it's not, that news was not shocking to me, 'cause I just like, it, I was like, yeah, I could see that happening. Right. Probably see it happen in the United States, but I figure like, I don't, maybe not, maybe we're a little more structured here, but like, I could definitely see it happen. So it didn't shock me. But I could just think about just the financial numbers, that could trip if us, a good
yeah.
portion of people, because there's some programs where from an ING perspective, maybe 10%, 20%, 30% of their class.
Yeah.
And now if you take 20, 30% of the reimbursement of those residents, like it could get very spooky.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so I'm not sure how much I mean, like you made a good point before. I don't know how aggressive the USMLE is going to be and sort of going back to, the beginning of time and investigating things, because at a certain point, you've got to think there's more harm to their reputation and their organization by doing that, But at the same time, I mean, you made the other another point that's I agree completely with them. Cheating begets cheating. I mean, the more cheating there is, the more cheating there's going to be because people feel, I gotta cheat because I mean, how am I gonna get looked at if, all these people who are cheating are so much higher than me? And so, the more of it you tolerate, the more you're gonna have to tolerate.
Oh, that's cool. That's a great point. Oh, I love that. Love it. Before I let you go, before I, because like I said, this has been such an amazing conversation. For because obviously we've kind of talked about USMLE's kind of, I don't want to say responsibility, but we've kind of, their responsibility. We've kind of talked about the GME perspective. Now, this class, I think I was probably more shocked with this scenario that someone was actually suing. Like, I would figure like if you get caught, like, all right, you got me. But like to get to the point where you're actually suing, is there a scenario like where like the suit goes bad for USMLE? Like, given all that data?
That's a good question. I don't know if I've thought about that much. I mean, I think USMLE is going to withstand this. I think that they're going to continue to evolve the test because, I mean, it's clear that these recalls are a problem. It's not a problem that's easily solved with the current format of the test. You know, the fundamental problem that they're up against is that it takes a while with the manpower that they have to develop USMLE test items. Once they develop them, they get tested as experimental items, and not all of them pass muster. And then once you have old items, you know, one thing that, you know, I've heard some people say, because they don't really understand how the test works, they say, why can't you use new items for every test? And even if that was possible, there's actually a mathematical problem with that, which is if you want USMLE test scores to be sort of comparable across, you know, eras, I mean, at least within a reasonable time frame, what you have to do is you have to leave some old questions on the new exams to equate the scores so that you can look at, you know, well, we had a group of examinees that, you know, they got 61% of this question right, and this group gets 58% or whatever, because otherwise you can't really equate across exam years unless you have some material that's overlapping. So with an exam that has that format, they're sort of stuck with this recall problem. And I think that ultimately, what they're going to have to do, which I mean, I already predicted they're going to do this for other reasons, and in fact, they're already doing it for, you know, some things already, is to have short response questions. Those are a little bit harder to, you know, fix in your memory and make a, you have things where you actually have to type or write a
Type in
free
and give
response.
us, wow, okay.
Yeah. So they've actually been at that for several years, and you got to think with all the stuff that we're hearing with AI, I mean, the ability to grade those things consistently and rigorously is going to be even better, you know, as we have the computing power to do that. So I think we'll see stuff like that. I think, you know, similarly, you know, you could try to think of ways to vary question stems a little bit more significantly so that they're not as readily recognizable.
Oh,
Or
that's a good point.
simply,
Oh, that way you can't just look at it and be like, oh, that's how that.
yeah, exactly, right. So I think they're going to have to change the format of the test to get away from this recall problem, you know. But I think that they will survive. I mean, I think that, you know, it's hard to imagine not having a licensing exam, you know, and I think it's hard to imagine somebody supplanting them as the organization that does it.
And because I had someone ask me, I get some funny comments, and they ask, they like, well, like, you know, with Chat GPT and stuff, why can't you just make up new questions? I'm like, nah, it doesn't work like that. Like, there's a whole process that occurs before that question lands at number one. Like,
So I think that's what they're up against. I mean, I want to say too, when you mentioned, you know, you're surprised by the law, I was surprised by the lawsuit also. You know, because you know, the plaintiff doesn't look good. You know, you got to think that she's not having a chance to,
like,
because you know.
if I'm a part of that, you know, 809, I don't want you to know I'm a part of that group.
Right. Yeah, I agree. That's not a flag I would want to stand out in front of everybody and carry. But you know, but it's hard to imagine because, you know, it's one thing to have your scores invalidated. I mean, it's not good. But it's even worse to have your scores invalidated and then to state in your lawsuit that you swear under oath, under penalty of perjury, that you didn't cheat, and then the NBME comes back and like dunks on you with all of this data that they have, you know.
Amazing. Again, I appreciate this discussion. And when it came down, I again, like I said, I wrote it in the wind. I said, you know, I gotta see if I can get Adekunle on the show, because I know he'd knock it out of the park, which he definitely did. Before we let you go, like, where can people find you, follow you? Like, I know you said you dropped a new episode today as we're recording. Like, where can people kind of follow the Sheriff of Sodium? Which I first of all, I love that brand name, but you know, especially being a nephrologist, I love that brand name.
I'm still on X at JB Carmody. I'm also on Threads at JB Carmody. And I've tried to move over there, but it's you know, I haven't been able to sort of reach the same audience, so I'm still on X. I have been trying to put more things, you know, more thoughtful content on YouTube. So if you go to YouTube, I'm the Sheriff of Sodium, and there's quite a lot of stuff there, and a lot of it is sort of I mean, some things like this are sort of more current events, but most of it's sort of evergreen content on medical education and, my opinions about things if that's something that interests anybody. So.
Definitely. Again, and especially, and I kind of mentioned I would, because I got a lot of thoughts on medical education just in general. But this USMLE stuff came up, so I said, you know what? Like maybe I could table that for like I'll bring it back for a second episode because I got a lot of thoughts on medical education just in general, especially because I'm an osteopathic physician, right? And you know the whole merger, like well again, neither here or there. We're definitely something we want to go into again. Dr. Mighty, thank you for taking the time out. Right, blessing us. I mean, this has been an amazing conversation. Again, I'm like I said, I follow you, so I watch your video, so I'm gonna be kind of following. Like me following the news is really just me following you, and then because I know you do such a great job, I like if he gets it, then it'll just kind of through osmosis kind of get to me.
Well, thanks for all your kind words and thanks for having me on.
Thank you for getting to the end of the episode. I am yours truly, Dr. Barry Pierre, favorite board certified internist. Like always, remember to subscribe to the podcast, leave us a 5-star review, and more importantly, share this to at least 2 of the 5 of your friends and family members that you know that could be empowered with the words that you heard today. Again, so appreciative of all you guys' support. See you guys next week.